Live. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Lunar Crush Live. I'm here with Toby today. Toby, how are you, my man?
I'm good. Yeah, just trying to deal with this.
You got the heat going on up there?
Yeah, I was dealing with a bit of the heat. But yeah, happy to be here.
Thanks, man. So today I've got Toby Fan. He's a Web3 strategist here at Lunar Crush. And today we're going to be talking in a minute here, bringing on David and Phil from Altered State Machines. They're super stoked to be on here. Wait till you see this background. David's got it so lit. And then Altered State Machine is a decentralized protocol, creating ownership of AI agents via NFTs. I'm really interested to hear what in the world that means. Our disclaimer, as always, remember, we do not take payments for live streams. We bring on fun, exciting people who have dedicated their careers and lives to crypto. So we're excited to bring them up here in a minute. Also, we've got Anthony Scaramucci, founder of Skybridge Capital, later on this week, who's coming on. I'm excited to hear a little bit more about the markets and what's going on there from him. Lots going on. All right, let's have our intro here and we'll get to it. Welcome, 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 sirs. How are you guys today?
Not too bad. How are you? How's it going?
Great, thank you.
Sorry, I better my...
Dude, we're going to get shocked by that thing. It's like it's coming through the monitor right now.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's the Esto portal. Yeah.
Cool. Well, you guys, we always love to start with who are you? Where are you in the world? And what's it like there? And David, I mean, I got to start with you because there's someone trying to get into into the room over there.
Yep. Yeah, the portals have been opening up everywhere, and I just happened to have one in my room. So I'm actually, believe it or not, not in the metaverse right now. I'm in New Zealand, in Auckland, and it's finally a sunny day here. It's been raining nonstop for about 2 months, so finally it's starting to get better.
Two straight months of raining nonstop. I don't know if that sounds good.
No, it's gotten pretty damp around here.
Awesome, man. Well, thanks for coming on. And Phil, who are you? Where are you in the world? What's it like there?
Hey, I'm Phil, co-founder of Altered State Machine, alongside David. And I'm I've traded rainy Auckland for sunny New York City, except we've traded places. It's actually raining in New York today after weeks of heat waves. So I think David's got the better end of the stick today.
Awesome. Finally. Well, thank you guys for being here. And I mean, David, maybe you talk a little bit. I mean, I don't talk to a lot of people in New Zealand that are in the crypto space specifically. I mean, I know that there's a community there, though. And just what's it like building in Web3, like in New Zealand?
Yeah, so there's actually been a community here for a long time doing a lot of building. I think so. A lot of it started with Centrality, which was founded about 6 years ago now, Phil, mm-hmm. was it? About 6 years ago, which is a venture studio, has spun out a lot of blockchain crypto projects in the infrastructure and DeFi space. And I've been working along those teams for about 5 years now. I was originally based out of Melbourne in Australia, and then took over the Tokyo office for a while before this whole COVID thing hit. But there's been a lot of awesome teams come out of New Zealand, a lot of people experimenting in this space, and it's just created a pretty cool community of builders, which is great to be part of.
That's awesome. I love how the space has just opened up remote work from anywhere in such a different way. And it's like, I tell a lot of people who are getting into the space, it's like, you know, if you've ever wanted to work in an industry or like a job where you're just working internationally and just like different cultures and like different people, it's like such a shortcut in this space to just get right into something and be able to kind of like get that international experience. It's like some of the stuff is so simple as like getting time zones down and like when do you have your calls and prioritizing things and how do you stay focused, like, you know, internationally like that. And so how do some of the meetings line up for you guys? Are you guys always like, so you're right now it's tomorrow there, right? Mm. So it's the second. Yep. And what time is it for you, David?
What are we, 10:30 in the morning?
Yeah, so like like morning time. This is like you guys are just past that first coffee, and it's like for us 3:30, and it's like it's just like there's sometimes there's those nuggets of like great time zones where it just hits really well, and I feel like you guys are in one.
Yeah, this one's not too bad, but if we deal with Europe, it gets a bit trickier because UK is another like 12 hours apart from us. So
those guys in London are the worst.
It can be tricky, but Joe, you know, you've made a great point. Like technology, and particularly crypto, has flattened the world, and no much more so than in the last couple of years. I was actually just having this conversation with one of our partners and investors here today. How before the pandemic, building a technology business out of New Zealand, people still wanted you to meet you at kind of before they did business with you. And it is always tomorrow in New Zealand. Yeah. And now you can create relationships and create amazing project partnerships. And you might be working with people for a couple of years and until you actually meet them, and you've already built up a lot of trust and respect and got a lot of runs on the board. And we love being out on the edge of the world and being in tomorrow.
Mm. Yeah.
And even over the pandemic, even though we have probably about 90% of our staff are based in New Zealand, because of the pandemic and lockdowns, we hadn't met like 30 of our staff at all in person until after the first lockdown. And we had a little bit of a Christmas get together and finally got to meet all these people in person that we've been working together with and launch product with. and never seen them face to face, even though we're in the same city. So this is the world we live in now.
It's so wild. Yeah, I mean, we're like at Lunar Crush, like we have over like 1 million monthly active users here, and it's like there's still people on our team that like I've not, like, you know, they don't know how tall I am. I don't know how tall they are. Like, we're just like, but like like some people surf really well. Some people, it's like it is kind of a wild thing, but it's this, you know, it's kind of the mantra of the space, right? Like, we're democratizing opportunity. And, you know, if someone lives in a certain area, it's also like, you know, you're not taking advantage and paying that person less. You're paying them for the job that they're doing. You know, it has nothing to do with where they're living, and it's about their output. And I think it just kind of goes well with like the whole mission of what I think Web3 is trying to do. And it just kind of finds its way throughout the, you know, the business as well. Very cool. So I want to know what it means to give your existing NFT a brain.
Cool.
Because that's what it says on your site, and I'm just like very interested in what does it mean to give your existing NFT a brain, and maybe you guys can loop that into like what is Altered State Machines.
Yeah, cool. So we when we sort of came up with that tagline, I guess we imagined you know, a lot of people moving into the space, in the NFT space, that Fluff World and Party Bears and the rest of our ecosystem partners have, and some have, but around producing 3D game ready assets that are produced to go into metaverse spaces and into games and be sort of interactive. As the NFT space exploded, I think a lot of people went down the 2D JPEG route. Mm-hmm. But there still is a lot of 3D game ready content out there. So we're working with obviously our ecosystem partners and people like Crypto Walkers and other people who have 3D ready assets to make them intelligent in these spaces, to make you able to compose your own NPCs essentially, and provide them with life and allow them to do things like play games of soccer, navigate spaces, interact with other people. When you think about how these worlds are going to grow out, we're probably going to end up with 1,000 times more NPCs in this world than there are people. And if you take on the ethos of the Web3 and open metaverse space, it's all about bring and create your own content. And we think that people need the tools to create their own AI and create their own interactive experiences using artificial intelligence.
Yeah, our vision really is to like create a world where the value of AI flows back to everybody. So if we can, you know, to David's point, the metaverse is coming. We don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but we do know that it's going to be persistent, always on, and deeply immersive. And there can only be so many humans in the metaverse space at any one time, but all of us are going to have agents who represent us in this crazy future. And if we don't have the tools to create, train and trade our own AIs, then we're just going to be renting them off the big tech companies forever. So what we're trying to do is create these fundamental tools for everyone to create, train and trade their own AIs.
And why is that important in the arena that you guys have kind of decided to build? It's like, hey, I could say, hey, I'm going to go create trainable systems where it's like, hey, I'm going to point this thing at, you know, I'm going to point it at real estate data, and anyone can create their own AI, like in their own, you know, natural language library, and kind of have people kind of train out MLS data or something like that. Why is it important in the arena that you guys decided to build it in?
It's philosophically important everywhere, because if you have like 1,000 developers making the decisions about how AI is implemented in these future spaces, which humanity is going to spend so much time in, then you fail to capture the full human thought and imagination. And instead, if anyone and everyone can train their own AI, then we get the full diversity of human thought going into those individual AIs. And we don't know what that will look like, but we know it will be better than just a few people training those AIs.
It's pretty amazing when you think about the application for, like, you know, if every Google search had like 1,000 times more intelligence on it, or like I could kind of like manifest my own in a way and apply it to anything. I mean, is that kind of where you guys are thinking? It's like, hey, like you said, like the thousands of other characters that are going to be kind of not the individual. It's like, go out and kind of create that and make it my own, and make, like, I can replicate and sell that on my own, or like, you know, I can kind of spin off. It's like, you guys are kind of saying, we're going to be this underlying layer of, you know, autonomy, I guess.
Yeah. And creation. I mean, we have this little catchphrase that we like to say, which is, we want to give people the tools to create an AI that's fun, interesting, or valuable for them. You know, fun, it might be in a game application. Interesting, they might play around with it to make art. Or valuable, they might get it to compete and win or trade. And, you know, we want to open up the broadest possible number of avenues for a decentralized AI, and give everyone the tools to be able to store them. And the reason we use NFTs, of course, is that if we attach that AI to the NFT, then the value of that NFT increases with the value of the AI.
And it gives it natively tradable properties, which we think is important. If you've created something valuable, whether it be in the context of a game, say you've trained, you know, the greatest boxer, virtual boxer in the world, and you don't want to play that game anymore, but you've put a lot of time and effort into creating that asset, you can go and natively trade that, and somebody could pick that up and continue the story of that character within that environment. And also interoperable, if somebody creates an environment for boxing inside their world, you could take that asset and that AI and allow it to perform in another world. And which are two core principles of what we're building: interoperable and ownable.
I think that brings up a good point, and that's a, like, one of my questions actually is like, are you able to apply like the ASM brain or like that kind of like AI enabled NFT to an existing NFT, for example, to like kind of mess with those attributes or like play in their world? Like, it just seems like such a cool idea to like scale interaction and like scale, like, you know, experiences in the metaverse like that.
Yeah. So essentially we've got two pieces to what we call an agent. It's the brain that contains the genome matrix and the memory tree. The memory tree is the neural network files for individual sort of specialized things like reinforcement learning models, which are quite small, and also access to larger deep learning models like an NLP or a GAN or something like that. And these are composable components, so you can contextually compose them. And then the genome matrix makes sure that there's consistency over what constraints those neural networks are trained with. So say you've got an aggressive soccer player who's fast and strong, he will also be an aggressive boxer who's fast and strong, so that you get that consistency of personality across different use cases, even though they're using individual neural network files that are trained on very different tasks. Then you've got what we call the form, which is a representation of your NFT, whether it's a 3D model or even a JPEG, potentially if it's just a simple web interaction. Or it could be a number of things. A form is just what represents the actions of your AI.
Okay, so if I understand right, like the form is sort of like the expression of maybe like the attributes of an NFT that gets expressed, in a different way in different worlds, like colors or maybe like speed or some sort of like attribute that's applicable to the game or to like that art world. Is that kind of sort of that sounds like what the form is, sort of?
Form is probably in most cases a 3D model.
Okay.
Like a character, like a digital rabbit from Fluff World, for example. Yeah,
and the expression of those attributes actually comes from the brain and from that genome matrix that David mentioned. That's the DNA of the character. It's the its unique traits and its strengths and weaknesses that make it different and interesting in that particular game or that particular experience. And having some noise and some different values in the underlying, DNA of the agent is really important, because if for anyone who's got a bit of a engineering background and has ever played around with a reinforcement machine learning model, often when you train them, if they all start from the same point, they can develop down the same path and they choose the same strategies, and they can reach false peaks where they actually stop performing better and they get kind of stuck. And if you think of like a little 4x4 soccer game like AFA that we're creating, when you've got characters that have these underlying different strengths and weaknesses, some are faster, some are slower, some are heavier, some are lighter, they're better at other things, then they actually develop different strategies and they start taking up different positions on the field. And this is what we call the gamification of AI. And it's actually a whole new layer in gaming that is, we're only just beginning to scratch the surface of the possibilities for it. But that's all driven by this genome matrix, which is the DNA in the brain that adds diversity to the mix.
Gotcha. Are there any games that you guys know about right now out there that kind of use at least like a small piece of that, where it's like, because it starts to get kind of crazy when you think about it. I'm thinking about that one movie with like Ryan Reynolds where he was like the NPC or whatnot. But it's like, there's kind of like...
Free guy.
Yeah,
that's a fave. Yeah,
okay. Because there was like, it's just, I'm just thinking about like the surprise element of, you're coming into a game, and if you haven't played in a day or two, it's kind of a new game, and it's like it's kind of learning and adapting to like the different inputs that are going. Is there anything that's like more simple right now that's like trying to kind of do that? It's like I don't really think I know of anything that's doing that.
So there was a game released about 20 years ago that did this in a small way by Lionhead Studios called Black and White. And that was a very simple implementation of some reinforcement learning neural network inside their game that was really interesting, and I actually played about 20 years ago, which gave me sort of the spark to start diving into and researching the space. So that was the first example of I'd seen. At the moment, Forza Motorsport has been using AI in this sort of way for their Drivatar system for quite a while, but it's not exposed to the users. You don't get to interact with it. You don't get to own it. You don't get to trade it or even, you know, compete with it. But they do use it in a similar sort of fashion for training their sort of ghost racing models that you can race against.
They haven't open sourced it to the community.
Haven't opened it up and given people access to it. And apart from that, I think there's some limited uses. Some people out there are using things like GPT-3, which is, I don't know how you can connect that to an NFT and say you own it because you don't own it. but other than that, I don't think there's any sort of decentralized examples out there that I've managed to find at all.
Man, I'm just thinking back, like I played EverQuest like probably too much back in the day. It was like 12 to 17. I was like, you know, I was like an 18 hour, 20 hour day person. Like, you know, to the point where like, you know, you hear your like mom coming down the hallway at 6 a.m. and you like sprint to the couch. You're like, oh no, I've been sleeping. I'm just going to get up now and just keep playing. You know, it's fine. But it's like, I mean, you get to like a level 60 at the time and it's like, you have different servers, you know, that you play on. And it's like, I mean, I can't even like the quantity of time and hours and effort. And like one day you just have to pick up and walk away. And it's like, sure, you can go onto like crazy forums back in the day and try to like sell your character or something like that. But it's like, you're not getting like, you know, you're not even close to what's capable today to take that character and move that somewhere else. And like, it's just,
you're totally right, Joe. Yeah. All of those early attempts at marketplaces, even the ones with kind of arbitrage or man in the middle systems to try and make it a little bit more trustworthy. They were very almost shady places, and it was very hard to trust what you were getting. There was a, you know, definitely a lack of transparency in those marketplaces and a very small volume of interested parties and traders. And
also you get your account banned if you got caught.
it's illegal.
Like, you don't own it.
Service,
yeah.
Yeah. You don't own it. It's very clear that you don't own it when you get your account banned.
Yeah.
For doing something that you think you should be able to do, which is resell something that you've put effort into, right?
Yeah. And this is just the fundamental difference between Web 2 and Web 3 business models.
Mm. Yeah. I feel like with the gaming companies, they just, because they're, you know, it's like inherently, like obviously they're going to fight against anything where they feel like they have a lot to lose. But it's like, man, if you could be one of the first people to really embrace it, it's like the sky is the limit. And so like for you guys thinking about the composability of some of this stuff, it's like, are you looking for people to come kind of build with what you guys have? Are you looking to kind of build some of your own things? Like where does it kind of start with this? And where's the first kind of couple implementations happening?
You want to go?
No, this is actually right down early.
The answer is both. The answer is both, yeah. And, you know, this is the platform that we're building is a big vision. As I mentioned, the use cases for it are endless, and they're not only limited to gaming. Like we talk about it in the context of gaming because that's the avenue that we're looking at first. But we need to create the tools for ownability, composability and tradability of our these AI models, and they're going to be implemented in hundreds of different ways. And you don't build a successful, scalable, open platform by just trying to build the platform without real world use cases. Instead, you take some really cool examples like, hey, I want to create an AI soccer game like we're creating for Aether, or I want to create an AI boxer, you know, which is a very one-on-one, like really classic matchup of AIs. And you like the game we're doing for Muhammad Ali called The Next Legends. And you create those games. And then from those learnings, you actually help use that to enhance your platform. So we're building our own experiences in the partnership with our IP partners and our early adopters, some of whom are big brands like the aforementioned Muhammad Ali. And we've got a couple of other massive globe spanning brands that I really want to say it, but I really can't. But I'll just say there's in the sports space and in the film movie space, and it's very, very exciting. And with those partners, we're building out these these big experiences that are going to help prove more of the points that we are working on. And at the same time, we're building with Web3 partners. So we are working with Crypto Walkers and with a couple of other projects who we're announcing very, very shortly. And getting integrations happening or uses of the technology happening, you know, at this at the really recognizable popular consumer brand level, and also with really cool underground Web3 projects that we know and love, people who are working directly in our space. And from all of this, we're taking the learnings from that, and we're using them to enhance our product platform and make that available and scalable for every experience builder. And that will, you know, cross from gaming right out into any other metaverse use case. It doesn't necessarily need to be a game.
To be released open source and governed by the DAO.
Yeah.
Altered State Machine DAO. So it's truly decentralized.
Yeah, that's very dear to our hearts, because there are a few companies who are looking at the ownable AI space, and we keep an eye on the other projects that are working on this, and we think that that if you scratch beneath the surface of quite a few of these other AI NFT projects, a lot of them are relying on some Web2 technologies, or they're not truly decentralized. So the either the models themselves, or the outputs of the models, or the way that the character behaves, it's not actually decentralized, and ultimately that's going to cause some problems for them over time in terms of their scalability. Because if it's not truly decentralized, then do you own it?
Can you dig into that a little bit about how exactly is it like extremely or 100% like decentralized? Is some of the compute done for some of the other ones in a more centralized manner, and then for you guys, is it all on chain there, or is it like, are you talking about like the pure ownership of that specific AI model that they create, that they have, but then they're naturally, obviously, like with the game scaling and building, that has to be like, you know, Web2 for at least the time being. Is that what you're getting at?
It's important to realize that AI isn't one homogenous thing. There's a lot of different types of AI for different purposes, all the way from, you know, if you could call decision trees AI in a kind of way, all the way up to big deep learning neural network models that are hosted up in the cloud. And there's a variety of approaches that you take to training and utilizing different types of AI, from reinforcement learning models, which are little tiny open source neural networks that we can use and train for specific tasks, for everything from how a character might move throughout a world, how it learns to walk, how it plays a game of soccer or performs in a boxing ring. And we can compose those small, several megabyte files together in interesting ways to create different types of experiences within spaces. And then you've got the big ones like big GANs and NLPs for chatbots and that sort of stuff, natural language chatbots and that sort of stuff. And those need to be community owned and open source, and use something we call decentralized inference, where you can run a node infrastructure of that neural network and allow that is verifiable and immutable, with the output is verifiable and immutable to make sure it comes from that space and is not a forgery, essentially. So if you're using GAN to create art, you want to verify that you've created it, your inputs have created it, and the output is from the expected model, and be able to verify that is important. So there's a lot of different approaches. The Hivemind approach is for larger models, and that'll be hosted in a node infrastructure by probably larger organizations and DAOs. And then there's the individual files that are small enough to use decentralized storage like IPFS, where you can own them yourself. Very cool. Then there's the training of it as well. They're providing your GPU compute power to the network and using that, which is fueled by the ASTO token, to train these models in a decentralized manner, which is also important to make the infrastructure decentralized, as opposed to the current Web2 model, which is, you know, Google or Amazon or Elon Musk owns the infrastructure, owns the data, and makes money from people paying to use it, and also just handing over all their data at the same time, and saying thanks and walking away.
So that genome matrix you mentioned earlier, that's tied to the brain, are those values like in that matrix or that heat map, is that what is the inputs into the model, or is that like, or that's part of how does that map to the AI model?
That's your constraints and your diversity drivers. Depending on what you're using it for, it'll work in different ways. But the idea is that we can create a consistent a library that allows us to create consistency over use of that that heat map for defining values. So an area on that map will become things like power and strength and maybe aggressiveness, and that sort of those sorts of constraints will come from this area, and then this other area will be, you know, speed and agility and dexterity and how fast a character might talk will come from this area down here. So that when you take your brain from one world to another, you get a consistent experience with that brain. You know what you're going to get into. You can predict some of the outcomes of the training.
Gotcha. Yeah. So that does that change those values? Like, so as like the.
No, the those underlying values are like the DNA, and the training works over top of those within the environment, whatever that might be, you know, if it's a soccer field or a boxing ring, and the training works in that environment with the genome matrix, the DNA, is the diversity driver underneath it. So it's learning based on its constraints, and then the learnings of that model are stored in the brain.
Okay, that's really cool.
And it's important to note that we're setting up a system where the mappings for the genome matrix, what it represents, you know, these ideas we keep talking about, like, you know, speed, power, strength, dexterity, they are available to all developers, but they are composable as well. So individual experienced developers can choose which of those they use, and they might choose to mix the values of the values between their form in the brain and their experience. So they might choose to use all of the thinking stats from the brain as in their game, but they might choose to keep the physical stats in their game engine. It's really up to them. What we're giving is these provably differentiated set of diverse competitors. And we, you know, we can prove that they are all that they've all been algorithmically created, and that they haven't been unfairly balanced in any way. And then it's up to the game developer to create the experience they want from that.
Got it. That's really cool.
Yeah, we're having fun playing with how we mix up the difference between the having the all of the expression of the character come out of the genome matrix, which is a very pure expression of what Altered State Machine is. It's like, that's my brain. You know, this is how good it is at these things. And it's and let's train based on that, and train, learn and play based on that. And then also having more hybrid experiences where, for example, the size and the height and the weight of a character might actually come from the physical model, and playing with those is a really playing with those as part of the joy, I guess, of creating these new types of game experiences. I just saw a question come up asking if the brains are interoperable. Absolutely they are. So if they've been attached to a boxer, we talk about the next Legends game that we're doing with Muhammad Ali, it can learn to box, and then you can take the brain over and put it in a fluff and it can learn to do something else. You could take it over to a soccer game and train it to play soccer.
Community loves the brain. I'm like, as you guys are talking, I'm just thinking, like, I feel like whoever branded artificial intelligence, like, kind of screwed up. Like, it just, like, is like feeling like it's almost like holding back what's actually happening. Because, like, I feel like people are just, like, scared of, like, that Boston Dynamics, like, you know, the four-legged robot that they created. And, like, they taught it how to walk. And then they're, like, it was just laying there, and how to walk, and then they cut a leg off. And, like, it found out how to walk, like, perfectly fine right after that. And it's like, that's what people think when they think artificial intelligence, but they don't think like this, like, insanely scalable, composable, like, thing that, like, I can now own and get small pennies off of because I applied, like, this value across any single game. Or, like, I'm just even thinking, like, some, like, other business applications that you could potentially have if, like, you have some IP around something that you could, like, put up in, like, a marketplace or something like that, and almost... Like, I think about, like, a scale.ai and, like, some of these Mechanical Turk type things too. And it's like, man, if you have all of these people training a model for you across different sectors, it's like, what does that turn into? Like, when you guys kind of thought about this and your brain started to go off into, like, crazy, like, what is, like, holy cow, we could do this, then we can do this. And obviously we all have to, like, build our way there. But it's like, is there anything, like, way out there that you thought about, like, this is what I'd love to see the world look like if this, like, technology was ubiquitous?
Yeah, well, it's so huge, and, you know, you've nailed it in saying the applications are almost endless. And we've been talking a lot about gaming, but there are so many applications outside of gaming, always on virtual assistants, trading bots. These are not use cases that we are actually working on right now, but they're all completely possible. And we're creating the most broad platform possible for developers. I mean, at the core of our business is a patent on the concept of attaching a machine learning model to an NFT. So if you can think about anything that you can create a reinforcement machine learning model to do, to trade, to talk, to fight, to write a song, then you can create a trainer for that to make it better, and you could use the altered state machine protocol to store it in an NFT and store the value. And that's really what we're about. And then if you fast forward into the future and you've had all of both us and all of the developer community who will come on as the protocol is built out, every one of those, the singing, the dance, the fighting, the trading, the training, all of those will eventually become composable. And as execution environments get more standardized, and as Web3 builds out interoperability, you'll be able to have brains that have been trained to do all these different things. And as they go into different environments, then they can have different experiences and use these different memories to actually function like a fully fledged member of the metaverse. That's really exciting.
It's insane.
It's I think the majority of approaches to AI is that sci-fi approach, like, let's build a robot. Yeah. Or the closest thing we can, chatbot, right? And that'll be cool. People can go and chat to it and have a great time. I think that use case on its own has sort of limited legs. You get bored chatting to a computer pretty quickly.
Or if you work at Google, you think that it's actually a real person, and then you go tell TechCrunch.
Tell the
Touché. But, yeah.
Yeah. But I think if you look at AI is a bit more like nature is than trying to build this sci-fi vision where you have a lot of different types of intelligence out in nature that are specialized for their environments and work very well in their environments to do the thing that they do. And I think there's a little bit of an arrogant goal of humanity to create AI that is human-like and thinking that's the ultimate goal, but it's not necessarily the ultimate goal of intelligence, is to be like a human.
And it doesn't need to be. Not only is it a stretch for our current intelligence, but what humans really want from their AI in the first instance is something that extends them, that does something, you know, to come back to the start, useful, fun, or valuable for them.
Yeah. Think beyond recreating a human with artificial general intelligence, and think how you can extend what you're doing. And I think that's a much more interesting way of looking at it than just trying to create Skynet, right?
It's like, that's what I'm saying. They screwed up in this branding because they call it artificial intelligence, and people are like, Skynet, let's go. About all the other applications that, like, maybe people are missing a little bit. I mean, the robots are insane. Like Boston Dynamics, like, I can't even. It's insane what they've done there. But at the same time, like, are there other consumer applications that we've kind of been missing? And now that the decentralization side of it is like a little bit more attainable, it's to a spot where it's kind of, we might be horizontally scaling here and we can build some things. I kind of see it as like the same thing as cloud, where it was like, hey, everyone used to have like servers at their company and whatnot. And then it was like, oh, we're into the cloud now. And now with crypto, it's like, oh, hey, there's like four layer ones. And then there's like 12. And it's like, which one do I pick? And then it's like, well, there's layer two coming, or there's everyone has their own blockchain and they all kind of are composable with each other. We're hitting this precipice where it's like what you guys are building could, like you're saying, like composable across all of these chains. And it's like, how do I just deploy that? And what kind of intelligence can I kind of just start dragging and dropping? And it's like, we're getting close.
And giving individuals the power to create, train these experiences. So developers, you know, have an experience, they put AI in it, and individuals, people come in and train them in different ways to do different things that's interesting for them. Create this real diversity of simple AIs, and those develop and grow and join over time to create something bigger. At the moment, you know, the AI, the training and the creation of AI, the thing that's actually like makes it different from another AI, is limited to computer scientists. And really, we want to unpack that and give the tools to everyone to train and trade.
The training. It's all about the training. I had a friend who was at Google Brain, and then it was like he had his pick of the litter with where he wanted to go as far as AI, and he chose Tesla because he's like, they have the most data. And I was like, I was not thinking as a data scientist, like, oh, that sounds like a place to go. But then he was talking about training the training, like using AI to train like the mod. And I was just, I got lost, and I was just like, holy shit, we're moving to this entire other world where it's like, how quick and smart can this get?
Well, it gets crazy, but you've actually got to keep it simple in the start, Joe. You know, we want to introduce people to owning, training, and trading their AIs in ways that are just really enjoyable. It's a little bit like at the start of Web 2, like no one had their own website, right? And everyone had to learn HTML to build their own website, you know, and then eventually you could kind of build your own, but it was quite hard, you know, but you no longer needed training to do it. You know, and now literally every business can roll up and, you know, with a couple of clicks, they've got a great website and a marketing platform and all of those things. Now, ignoring the fact for a moment that they are still owned by other people, if you're outside of the Web3 space, what we're hoping with AI is that we are going to introduce these tools that will bring people along on the journey so that they know that they can own one, you know, and get these tools to, you know, the tools will get better and better over time so that they can create first simple AIs, understand that they can be involved in that process rather than it being something that's over there. You know, AI is something that's done to me. Instead, it's something that I do. It's part of, you know, part of my digital life. Bring people in with game use cases, with fun, interesting use cases, and build it from there.
But, Toby, I've been firing them off. What do you got?
No, I like the sound of all of that. I think to your point, like kind of democratizing this sort of NFT AI experience, like what will that look like for the user? So like if I was to go and like grab an ASM brain, like what will kind of like democratizing that sort of access look like to me? Will there be some sort of like SDK, or I can like, spin it up and train my own like stuff, or like what will that look like for somebody just getting onboarded, I guess?
Depends on what entry point you're coming in as. So if you're a user, will have a very different experience from a developer. Developers will have access to SDK and then the protocol the AlterState Machine protocol, and all the documentation that goes along with it, to build out their own experiences for the end users. The end users will have access to abstracted tools. So for the example of the AFA soccer game, you'll take the role of a football manager, where you'll be coaching your team. You'll be saying, be more defensive or be more aggressive, or you stay in this area you stay in that area, or other sort of football coaching. I'm not a sports person, so I'm not the best at describing how to be a football manager, but it'll be an abstracted version of training that AI, by allowing you to take up that role as a football manager, and then watch your team grow and learn as you make these kinds of decisions for them, and try and make them the best team and assemble the best team that you can. And that will be interacting with the reinforcement learning mechanics, but they'll be abstracted in a way that you can sort of understand, and it's interesting to interact with.
Gotcha. And that's what the trainers will do, right? They'll kind of do what a person like a football manager would do, but like in a very iterative way, so that your team kind of learns faster, something like that.
Yeah, learns faster or comes up with interesting strategies. So you might get, you know, a team of people, a team of brains that are all super fast, and you might create a super fast blitz strategy, where they just overrun the team, and specifically train them to be aggressive like that and to forget about defensiveness. And you might think that's like the best strategy. And then somebody might create a super defensive team that kind of huddles around the goal and looks for opportunity, waits and is patient and looks for opportunities to sort of dive through and score a goal. So, you know, we can get access to a whole bunch of different approaches as far as, you know, your imagination goes, and then see what the results are, see who wins, and then see who can beat them.
That's so cool. It's just kind of like real life, you know, but maybe like in a more scaled way, because you're kind of doing it digitally and like you can kind of iterate so many times. And I think you mentioned earlier too, like people will maybe like pay these trainers or like pay to have their AI trained by somebody like, you know, with some sort of GPU or some sort of developer that like will put this model together and pay them in ASTO tokens. And I really like that, because now you're just kind of creating this economy within like the ASM world, where maybe like the trainer, you know, makes his income from training other people's AIs, and maybe like the game or the application, you can, you know, it's like a play to earn where you, you know, maybe earn tokens for beating other teams or something like that. And I really like appreciate that sort of like cyclical, like, you know, like economy with like the ASO token. And that's really cool.
Yeah. I think, ASTO token was designed with this utility in mind. There's no reason for a token without the utility. Training of machine learning models is core to the platform, and we need a way to fuel that. So the ASTO token's used for that purpose. And decentralized training infrastructure is important to us. And there's lots of different types of ways to train different types of models for these kinds of models that we use for things like AFA and Muhammad Ali. We're basically replicating a headless environment that the NFTs would be and the brains would be interacting with, and then running it in hypertime. So you can simulate millions of matches in a very short period of time across, you know, multiple different instances, and then compress all that learning at the end, deliver it back to the trainer. So they don't have to be computer science engineers or anything like that. They can just go along, say, be more aggressive, or train for these kinds of outcomes, press a button, goes off to somebody else's infrastructure, simulates a million games, comes back, and they pay their ASTO, and off it goes.
That's so cool. Kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you guys watch like Westworld, but like the last, you know, this last season where he kind of iterates like all these millions of scenarios in his head over a few years, and he wakes up and he's like kind of able to execute just because he's like seen everything, you know, he's kind of like played all these games like iteratively. So that's really cool. It might be like a good segue into like the ASTO token, like what, you know, besides kind of the, you know, paying trainers, or like what else can you do with it? Like I heard there's like, there's ASTO energy and some sort of like genome mining. Like what else can we do with like the ASTO token?
Yeah. So it's important for governance and fueling the protocol of Alter State Machine. So it'd be used as a governance token for the DAO. But also we need to produce assets as we get users onto the use cases and onto the platform. So if you can imagine, the AFA game is going to have hundreds of thousands of users. If it's, I think soccer is quite a popular sport and it's an interesting premise. We're going to need more than the 10,000 brains that we have available at the moment. So the protocol needs to be able to have a way of producing those assets for people who are onboarding. At the moment, you can stake your ASTO for ASTO energy, which you then can convert into Gen 2 brains, which you can receive and sell on the secondary market. For much larger use cases like Muhammad Ali Next Legends, there's a lot of Muhammad Ali fans out there, and we're building a AAA game. We're going to have a lot of users of that game, and the protocol needs to be able to provide assets not just to crypto native people, but to people not familiar, mass market, not familiar with crypto, and we need to provide an easy on-ramp and user experience for those people. So we need to provide bulk amount of brains, which will also use the ASTO energy a system that we're using for AFA. And then we've got use cases that are significant beyond the amount of fans that Muhammad Ali has, by orders of magnitude, that we're going to need to use ASTO for A, training, and B, for generating the Gen 2 brains, the assets for people to consume.
Yeah, so those are the three main things. Sorry.
No, that's cool. I was just wondering when those are coming out and where I can get one. It sounds like something I want.
So the Gen 2 brains is going to start coming out in 15, 16 days, something like that, Phil.
Yeah,
so that's
close.
When the first genome mining event happens, and people can spend their ASTO energy. Then the first next use case will be around about November, when we'll start seeing that use case coming out, and then we've got a whole bunch more that'll be rolling out thereafter.
Nice. And what about the game? You guys have the football game coming out and the boxing. Like when can we start playing that?
So the football game should be out in the next few months after the genome mining event has happened and people have gotten their Gen 2 brains ready to train up. We haven't set a date in stone yet, but it's not too far away. We'll have some in-game footage out soon for people to see what's going on. We're just going through the process of polishing the animations and the lighting and the scenes and tweaking the UI and making sure that it's going to be fun for people to play.
Yeah, that's so impressive that you guys are building out one, not just one, but like two games, and then on top of that, this whole like platform for like NFT AI. So you know, it's like gaming development, I imagine, is not an easy task. So. Very cool.
It's not.
We've
got a big team, though.
Yeah, we have our own big team, and we also work with gaming partners.
Mm. Yeah. That's important. You know, stick to what you're an expert in, and bring in experts to help execute other things. We don't plan to make every game in the world for the ASM protocol. And at the moment, I think we're outnumbered already by people who are lining up to develop on the platform. So, and that's where it will go. We'll be there to support on the AI side, make some games ourselves that we find interesting, but ultimately it'll be up to the community.
And develop example use cases so that we can show the potential of the platform that others can get inspired by. It's the most common question we get from both Web3 and Web2 game studios who want to come into Web3 by using ASM technology. They're like, oh, you know, give me some ideas about what I can do. And then we work with them so that they can craft up their ideas. But in the next 6 months to a year, there'll be a library of these different use cases that other developers can look at, get inspired by, and that will help the ecosystem grow hugely.
I love it. What about, is it Aussie rules football that you guys are also playing? Footy? Is there something else? Why don't we have Aussie rules yet? I don't know what's going on.
Because we don't play in New Zealand.
Yeah,
there's no Aussie rules.
New Zealand, dude, rugby. Yeah.
We're rugby.
Aussie rules is a particularly weird sport because it's not even really followed in all of Australia. Like it's almost a Melbourne thing.
Victoria.
Yeah, Victoria.
I just remember going to a game and there was like, the field was so big that, like, on one part of the field, there were just like ducks grazing.
That sounds about right.
There's just something where I was like, what's going on over here, guys? And then you look up in the stands and everyone just, you know, three sheets to the wind, which is like, big butt.
But New Zealand, of course, our two favorite sports in New Zealand, or the two most followed sports, are rugby and cricket. And those are both games that we would love to look at some point. We've actually had conversations with very large rugby brand holders, and we've got a game studio partner who we're talking with about opportunities and all sorts of. We've got conversations going on for all sorts of sports because they're interesting to gamify. They're nice early use cases for our protocol and platform. So yeah, watch this space.
Yeah, I love it because it's like with sports, it's kind of like you were saying, like the aggressiveness or defense, or, you know, you just kind of create those parameters and you can kind of compose those a little bit across different sports. And it's like, that's what gets exciting because it's like, it's actually the same type of thing as like when you train. It's like, you know, I'm from the Midwest here in the US, and like, you know, we would play because it was winter time, you know, it's like you play basketball in the winter and then I would play baseball in the spring and then I would play, we call it soccer here in the fall, but it's like my footwork was always really good for baseball because I played soccer. And then, like, you know, I always had like a little bit more better leaping ability because I played basketball, versus it seems like some people that specialize in one sport, sometimes it's like whether they were prone to injury or anything else. It's almost like the same thing with AI, where it's like when you're cross training everything, but like the skill set was the same. It's like, when do I need to like really push, or when do I need to stay calm, or like when do I need to like rely on my players a little bit more versus go alone. And it's like, there's something that's super cool there. And I'm thinking about, like, for some reason, basketball, and it's like, I just envision, you know, like there's like one play left and the coach has like the board, and the coach uses 35 years of experience, whether they were a player, whether they watched games or whatnot. And they know the players on, they know who's injured, they know who's not injured, they know, like, but they don't know like who's like, you know, they know if someone's got like a little hot hand, but they don't know if, like, man, that person's hitting 50% of their shots. I'm just imagining, like, if that board was one of your brains and it was just like a million different options right there. And then it was like, this is the best play that we need to run. And it's like, just kind of like showing it. And it's like, I mean, maybe it takes a little bit out of like the game, but it's the same thing as like with baseball. They're like, oh, we want the umpire to still call the game. But then once you see the technology and player, like, actually the game's way more interesting when it's like slicing this. I don't know. Is that, do you guys are seeing that when you're going into gaming a little bit more, with just like the optionality and cross training and everything?
So we've got, so we sponsor a thing called team and fan controlled football, which is super interesting space for us, which is kind of like trying to get peek into that world a little bit and see where we can marry these two things up. And that's a really interesting way you've just described it there. Is some stuff for some future development that we've been thinking about. as marrying that real world and metaverse space around sports.
I watched that for the first time like last month, and it was like wild. I was like, what is happening? Like, they're like, it's like a video game, but it's not, like, they're real players. It's like,
it's pretty cool, eh? But Joe, you know, you're talking there about the skills that you learn across different sports, you know, when you're a multiplayer sportsman. And, you know, it's not right now, but we imagine part of our vision is that the future world of Altered State Machine AIs have those cross capabilities, those composable talents, so that the things they've learned on one sport could transfer to another. And it's not right now, but we're gonna run that down. We're gonna get that going for smart agents in the Web3 metaverse.
Awesome, amazing, guys. Well, we did an hour here. I really appreciate you guys coming on, and it was super fun to learn about everything. Definitely let everyone know where can they find you guys.
Cool. Mostly on Twitter and Discord. So Altered State Machine. .xyz is the website, just find us on Twitter, have a chat, jump in the Discord. I spend as much time as I can in between meetings chatting to the community there, so if you've got any questions, always happy to answer them.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Toby. Thanks for your first live stream, man. You crushed it. Appreciate it.
Good job, Toby.
Thanks, guys. David
Hill, thank you guys so much.
Thanks, Joe.
XYZ, everyone. All right, fellas, we'll chat with you backstage.